to the structures that represented that tradition. And in fact, the oldest continuously occupied Gothic churches in America, not Gothic revival or Gothic reproductions, are along the coast of Virginia. There are a couple of them.
Because you say Gothic churches, and that leads to, there was always that steeple. That in the entrepreneurial middle column.
That's correct, there was.
The steeple assaulted, as a quote used, assaulted heaven. By God, we're going to be higher. That is rather fascinating.
Works two ways, isn't it? As anybody who worships in a Gothic space, incidentally, lots of Jews worship in Gothic spaces. One takes the Temple Emmanuel on Central Park in New York, one of the great, really Gothic spaces in America. Well, there's a two-way stretch. There's a interchange of energy. There is the sense from the exterior that there's a steeple pointing upward, you bet. It, incidentally, is more a compass needle than it's an assault, I think. It says, here we are. But it's on the inside, your impression in a Gothic space is of light coming down to you through those windows. It's as if, symbolically, the light of God were coming down through windows which are man's creation, is filtered and colored and changed, and it comes to me, the person in the congregation, as a result of man and God.
You know what's interesting about that? You mentioned light, and light plays a big role here. Now, we know that light in Gothic, light, the light of life, the light of God. Whereas in Orthodox Jewish synagogues and temples, there is little light because you cannot see the face of God.
Exactly.
That's fascinating. How
it's
a new form of that religion, modern one, altered a basic concept.
It certainly did. The ancient tradition, of course, is that we'd better not be too bold. It's like avoiding the name of the Almighty. You also did not look him in the face. You could wrestle an angel, but you're pretty careful about trying to wrestle that. So far as I know, the Jewish tradition is the only one represented in America which was actually, which has a clear set of rules about how much light you're going to have. You have to have some windows, but you are very careful about that assumption that you look the light in the face.
So, of course, you have here in the in your illustrated history, early beginnings. There's the Touro Synagogue, one of the earliest of Jewish churches of Rhode Island, Providence.
Earliest,
then you have all the beginnings of Catholic, but also the early Protestant churches, and the nature of change in them. I was thinking of black churches now. Earlier you mentioned the New England church had the meeting house quality, and by and large it did, didn't it?
Yes.
The meeting house, since the meeting, the town meeting was in. And so in the black church, we know the choir, very often in the edifice complex type churches, there's a far distance between the worshipers and the...
And the choir sings at
and
you.
And the choir sings at you. Yeah. Whereas we do know that, and so you have a case of the Tuskegee Chapel,
which is built so that the choir sings with you, which is quite different. The Tuskegee Church, which is a black and white composite, there's a white architect and a couple of black architects. Oh, that's a pretty a stately or a sophisticated or fancy version of what you were saying earlier, that the general experience in the 20th century is that black churches, particularly in urban areas, have been sanctuaries of people who could go to those places to pull themselves together, to speak together of serious things, in very much the same way that rural people came together to find sanctuary against the against nature and lots of other dangers. It's a marvelous... Sorry.
We do know, of course, that during the Civil Rights Revolution, it was so dramatically seen, the black church being the social and political center too.
There's a little bit of expression of that in architecture, in that many black churches came along at a time when people were building more toward a circular form, more toward a centering point, and that expresses to a considerable extent, I think, the centering function, the giving of an orient, of a place where you belong, in black communities.
Yeah, I know that this book of yours is so rich that what we'll do is we won't discuss this chronologically as you do, but rather in a free associative way. You mentioned the circular form. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the symbols, basic symbols, is not of all religions, all is the mandala.
Yes.
Would you mind, and you have a marvelous chapter, would you mind getting into that?
It's remarkable how Buddha sits in a kind of almond-shaped but close to circular form, the same form that Christ sits in majesty over the doorways of Romanesque churches. It's the format that seems to impose itself over and over again in the religious tradition. It was true at the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem. It was true throughout the Roman period. Toro Synagogue, the oldest synagogue on the continent of America, invites the congregation to look at each other. It's the form around the bima, the center, invites you to participate, exchange energy with each other. Now, that circularity, first of all, it seems...
Also the Quaker church.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. And one notices it in the great Benedictine churches of recent years. I think Barry Byrne would say it's how you feel when you're in there that counts. It doesn't matter, I don't think, so much how it looks to the tourist going by. But that circularity in which I'm looking at you, the way that Studs and I are looking at each other. I'm looking at you, and we're telling each other we're both engaged in something we take very seriously. Now, that's a very different thing than looking at an endless vista towards somebody else doing something at a great distance from you. It seems to me that what we tend to do in our history as a people is to leave it to other people for a while, and then we come back to doing it ourselves.
You know, it's fascinating. You mentioned the Jewish synagogue and temple and the circularity, and you mentioned the Quakers and circularity, and of course the black church's circularity.
Yes.
We do know that in cities, when a community changes from middle class to poor ghetto, in many cases it was Jewish, it became black in many cities.
Yes.
That synagogue became the black church. You still see the Star of David on some, but it fit so well because it was circular.
Well, and it works because people are still, I would contend, doing the same thing in there. That's what counts. It isn't as if you took the synagogue and you turned it into a shopping mall. You take a place where people engage with each other for serious purposes, and they happen to be Jews in one instance and black Baptists in the second instance.
And it could be, on a smaller scale, a Quaker meeting.
Easily. Easily. In fact, one of the things that was kind of funny in doing this book is that
because of the same principle of facing, of being all communicants and in community.
With each other, right.
Yeah.
Well, when you find out, looking at great architectural monuments, and you heard about them in the past and you want to go find them, often you can't find them under their old names. So you find there now something else all over the place.
See, what we're doing is very easily. Since this is radio, we're not seeing these quite marvelous colored reproductions of the churches. But what your book really tells me is what was going on in America, United States, at the time that church was conceived and built. That's part of your...
It is one of the things that grabs you as you go to these places, if you're listening. and maybe radio isn't a bad way of encouraging the listening. By that I mean, if you go into a place and you let yourself wonder about how come it took the shape it did with the materials it's got, you can answer a lot of those questions for yourself if you sort of listen to it.
Of course, this is part of your credo and your work. You, as the director of the National Museum of American History, having visited you there and seen it, those quite remarkable artifacts and inventions, mm-hmm. tell us,
they do.
You say, you and your colleagues, yes. what was it like mm-hmm. at that time?
Yes.
For in the daily life of people at that time who were involved when that machine was being built.
A church is a big artifact. It's also a big piece of sculpture. It is also a big container. And it does speak to us. One can learn, for example, if you go to Tucson and you see that extraordinary, huge, white Baroque church sitting against a Arizona hillside as if you were in Bavaria or Sicily or some magical Mediterranean place, you say to yourself, can't imagine that this is America. And yet, it's not only America, but it is an expression of the continuity of the same Mediterranean culture, desert setting, Hispanic Catholics coming into that kind of dry setting that it had 4,000 miles away.
See, you have a whole sequence on that, on the Byzantine churches, the Orthodox churches, as well as Hispanic churches, and going back to the early conquistadores with the missionaries.
And the Jews, incidentally. That's one of the things I didn't know before, but it's very probable that there were Jews among Columbus's sailors who could not profess, but the first Europeans,
the Muranos,
yes, to land in this continent were not the Pilgrim Fathers. It's well to remind ourselves of that, especially in the presence of so many Hispanic people. The first to get here from Europe, so far as we know, were Catholics and Jews. And it took a couple hundred years for the Protestants to get around.
So when someone says, my forefathers came here on the Mayflower,
that's right.
You could say, as Will Rogers did, mine were here to greet you.
That's exactly correct.
And so we're talking about this book, American Churches, by my guest Roger Kennedy. It's quite, I say, lovely indeed. And it's a new publishing house, much like Abrams, only independent, a great art class publisher, called Stuart Tabori and Chang. Now we have to speak of the movements in the country, the new migrants and the nativist movements, and how that affected churches and cathedrals, especially two huge ones in New York City. That's what you do. You tell us, and your writing is very much alive indeed, what is going on at the time. So there's the medieval kind of church. You also describe the different movements. There was the Renaissance, then the Reformation, and finally industrialism. And, of course, how that affected the building of cathedrals in Europe, and then how it affected here, us. We come to that, don't we? You also... And here's the part, very provocative, that the early cathedral builders, way back in the medieval days, were much more rounded people. They knew music and mathematics,
yes.
and poetry,
yes.
and all that
yes.
was in that place.
It was wonderful that you opened with that Bach toccata. From the beginning of recorded European civilization, philosophers have known that there was a connection between music, its intervals, architectural space and dimension, and they would say, and so would I, the shape and the fabric of the universe itself. That perception goes from, in our tradition, through Pythagoras, through Kepler, to Einstein, and along the way, through the cathedral builders themselves. It isn't just, though it's partly, that some kinds of music sound better in some kinds of places. It is also that the mathematics of architecture, form, and proportion are analogous to the mathematics of music. And a great, mathematician like Bach knew what he was about. He knew the spaces for which he was designing his music. And there was, and this is a little bit eerie, but it's true, there was a change in the music that got written in European churches after the architecture changed. There was a different kind of music that took place even in changes in the Gothic, and certainly, of course, enormous changes when it came to the great rounded spaces of the Baroque. There are certain kinds of antiphonal music that only work in St. Mark's in Venice, and you shouldn't try to do them in St. Pat's.
Well, I come to St. Pat's in a moment. Big question on my mind. We do know there was Palladio in Italy, and later on Christopher Wren in St. Paul's. But in these early medieval churches built by those who knew,